This interview for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program dealing with the Youngstown community, more specifically the Rabbi Sidney Berkowitz. The interviewee, the Sister Consolata, the interview is taking place at the Catholic Diocese at 225 Elm Street, Youngstown, Ohio, on July 21st, 1992, at approximately 20 after 1. The interviewer is Matthew Butts. Okay, normally what we do is we start off with some real brief biographical questions. Have you done oral history before
at the university? No, not at the university.
Okay. Okay, could you tell me a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up?
I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And I was one of seven children.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to school in Cleveland, and then I worked at a Cuyahoga Abstract Title and Trust Company after mm-hmm. I finished high school. And then I entered the Sisters Humility of Mary in 1943.
Mm-hmm.
And they're located at Villa Marie, Pennsylvania. I came to the Youngstown area an assignment to St. Elizabeth Hospital
mm-hmm.
in 1945. And I was there for in various capacities in administration until 1955 when I went to St. Louis University.
Mm-hmm.
I had started at Youngstown State University prior to that on a part-time basis, finished 2 years of college work, and then I went to St. Louis University for the completion of my college work and for graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
I did a residency in hospital administration as part of the graduate work at St. Vincent's Hospital in New York mm-hmm. in Greenwich Village. I returned to St. Elizabeth's Hospital and continued in my work there. In 1961, I was appointed the administrator
mm-hmm.
at the hospital, and I remained there in various capacities in administration, always as either the administrator or the executive director, until 1981.
Mm-hmm.
In 1981, I was elected president of our religious community, and I stayed in that role till 1989.
Mm-hmm.
In the following months, for about 9 months, I went to Notre Dame University for some postgraduate work, and at the conclusion of that, I came to the Diocese of Youngstown mm-hmm. as Vicar for Social Concerns for in the Catholic Charities Department,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I am currently.
Okay. What were some of your duties as president of the local? Was this the Catholic community or
of the hospital?
Uh huh.
Well, it's as far as the duties of the, I started out in the office,
mm-hmm.
and as I progressed, then I became an assistant administrator
mm-hmm.
and had charge of various departments within the hospital. And then when I became the administrator of the hospital, we went into several building programs
mm-hmm.
as well as the administration, the west extension and the south extension of the hospital was built during that time, and there was a real explosion of the utility use of the hospital because of the circumstances we had prior to that, needed beds and needed services.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were a lot of different types of educational programs that we developed throughout the hospital during those 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say responsibilities, it's you are the president of the hospital per se.
Mm-hmm.
You work with the board and with many departments. So
mm-hmm.
it was a very large hospital, and so you have the responsibilities of administration. You had a good staff,
mm-hmm.
very excellent physicians and employees. We, when I left, we had about 3,100 employees.
Mm-hmm.
any number of kinds of programs. During that time, I was very active at the state level on both the Ohio Hospital Association with the Catholic Hospital Association, mm-hmm. and also I was on the board of the Ohio Hospital and on the board of the was chairperson of the both the Catholic Conference of Ohio, our Department of Health Affairs, and also was chairman of the board for Ohio Hospital Association mm-hmm. during that time. And then I was on the board of the National Catholic Health Association in St. Louis, and a variety of other types of things that I did during that period of time. And forget what year it was, I was elected to the Women's Hall of Fame in mm-hmm. Columbus, and had that opportunity. I worked a lot with the initiation of the medical school in Rootstown, mm-hmm. and was chairperson of the hospital section, the board that we developed for the various hospitals that belonged to them. And that was a very interesting time, mm-hmm. with the development of the medical school. And it was three universities that came together to mm-hmm. form the medical school: Youngstown State, Akron University, and Kent University. I don't know if you have any particular things during that period that you'd be in. Think I should mention, I don't know.
I have a couple things about Youngstown right now. When you arrived here to the city, what was it like?
I came at the a time when it was the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
It was very active. The mills were going strong. The sky mm-hmm. was lit up with the red sky, which was typical of the open heart steel mills. The it was a tremendous bustling as far as a type of community. The schools were bulging because a lot of people came here to work. The mm-hmm. hospital was very busy. And with the termination of the war, a lot of the doctors that had been away came back, mm-hmm. and so their services started up again, their programs started up. Many of our residency programs were enlarged, and it was just a very, very active time.
Mm-hmm.
Polio was one of the diseases that was prevalent in the late 40s, and it wasn't until the Salk vaccine came that it was arrested. And we took patients from, it came into the hospital, both St. Elizabeth's and Youngstown Hospital Association took patients from a wide geographic area all the way down to beyond almost as far as Steubenville, and then branched out in a radius mm-hmm. for many miles, because we had the iron lungs and the medical facilities and mm-hmm. the physicians. So that was one of the things we were glad to see, you know, that because during certain years we had a great, as high as 200-300 people would be afflicted at one time
mm-hmm.
and throughout the Youngstown. They would come, not Youngstown City, but mm-hmm. they would come from the surrounding areas. Interesting that Boardman was not very large at the time, mm-hmm. but it just seemed to mushroom right around that time. And the hospital, St. Elizabeth's, prospered and did very well during those mm-hmm. years. So that was what it was like when I first came.
Mm-hmm. How about physically? What did the city look like the downtown area, possibly the north side around St. Ease?
Well, the downtown was a very busy, much busier. Mm-hmm. There were several department stores, McKelvey's, Strauss's, mm-hmm. Livingston's, just to name a few. And it was, the shopping was done in the downtown area.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, when I started at Youngstown State, they still had the remnants of Quonset huts that were put mm-hmm. up during the war. And in fact, I had a couple classes in some of them. And then they had started a building program right around mm-hmm. that time. And so Youngstown was, the university was very close to the heart of Youngstown, mm-hmm. the downtown part. And the bus service was good because you could get downtown easily.
Mm-hmm.
And the That lasted, I would say, from 45 to probably 55, and then the mall started to develop and it moved out.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, the downtown area was the hub of any of the activity.
Mm-hmm.
The there were they still had the movie theaters downtown. Mm-hmm. And it was during the 60s that the Powers Auditorium was, or the Powers, it was auditorium, but that was, mm-hmm. had been a former theater, I think it was the Palace Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And that was completely refurbished, and gorgeous place.
Mm. How about the area around St. Ives? What was it like? Was it still primarily residential?
It was very much residential, mm-hmm. and when we did our first expansion in the late 40s, a street was vacated for us in order for us to extend westward,
mm-hmm.
where the West Building now stands. And but that was all residential. And any people that we had to displace, we found them a like or better residence.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't have to be too far away because there was all of the areas around there. Park Avenue had many homes on it, which today there are very few.
Mm-hmm.
On North Avenue still had homes, and there were neighborhood stores. In fact, there was two neighborhood stores that were very close to the hospital,
mm-hmm.
diagonally across. Our emergency has been in different places, but when the emergency entered off of Park Avenue, at one time there was a little store that was right across the street from that.
Mm-hmm.
And the projects were rather new. I don't know what year they were built, but Chester Media was very active, mm-hmm. in the projects. And it was not an area that you would be hesitant to go down and walk through.
Mm-hmm.
So there were still houses on Belmont Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Two houses were next to the hospital going north, and there was an apartment going still further north, but there was a beautiful funeral home on the corner,
mm-hmm.
of Parmalee. And so all those were homes. Now they're all buildings, mm-hmm. That have been converted. Across the street from the hospital on Belmont Avenue, Belmont was, there were neighborhood homes, and you can see the remnants of some of the homes still.
Mm-hmm.
They were very well kept up. It wasn't until about the 50s that they started to, the homes were not kept up, mm-hmm. well, and they started to degenerate. But I would say as a, you know, even around the nursing school, there was neighborhood homes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people would, you know, keep up their property, and it was a typical neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It was not in any. The north side was developed, and it was a very nice place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And, so if you walk or ride down any of those, you can see many of the streets. Fifth Avenue was, mm-hmm. gorgeous homes. And began to have some buildings put up there, but they never detracted from the area.
Mm-hmm.
It was the doctor's office put up, and the library was put up on Fifth Avenue, but it was in the decor in them that matched the surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, you know, was recognized. They wanted to keep that in a very nice setting. Wood Park was always kept up very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that preserved that section of that neighborhood for many years. If you go down Park Avenue across from Wick Park, there was the Renner home was, mm-hmm. there, and there was some beautiful, and those are still very large homes. Subsequently, they were taken over by fraternities from Youngstown State.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, that was a very nice section.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Westlake Terrace projects. Were there predominantly were the residents of that African Americans, or was it a mix? Or
as I recall it, they were predominantly African Americans, although there was a significant number of whites.
Mm-hmm.
because we got a lot of patients from that area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Covington School is there. I think that's called Martin Luther King now.
Right. Yeah, it's across the expressway. Okay. if you could, describe for me the religious order you belong to, how it's changed over the last...
Yeah. I belong to a religious community that's known as the Sisters of the Humility of Mary. It originally came from France, and it was located... we were part of the Cleveland Diocese.
Mm-hmm.
It was a diocesan priest who went to France and asked for women who would teach immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how we came to this country. We located in right over the border from the Pennsylvania line, right outside of the Youngstown area, because when the sisters arrived, property that they expected to get was not available to them, and it was too expensive. So this was property that had belonged to the Bishop of Pittsburgh, and he offered it if the sisters would buy the house that was located on.
Mm-hmm.
They could have this. So that was our initial why we came to this area. And our sisters primarily were in education, teaching, and in the parish schools. Always had some sisters teaching secondary schools, and St. Elizabeth's was a major ministry of the sisters that started in 1911.
Mm-hmm.
We were asked in 1909 by the people of that area to consider staffing a Catholic hospital. They wanted to bring one to the Youngstown area, so it was built in 1911, and through the years, we've always had sisters who have been either in administration or have been part of St. Elizabeth's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the Youngstown area, we were in education at St. Edward's and St. Brendan's, some of the schools in the area. And we had a high school at Bellamy High School on Mother House grounds.
Mm-hmm.
We also expanded, we have sisters that work in many other areas in the northeast part of Ohio, particularly the Cleveland area. In the starting in about mid-1960s, a variety of types of work was open for the sisters.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 30s, a group of sisters had gone. I'm going to have to get a cough drop or something. Okay. I don't know what. I was trying to drink some tea to get in my... In the 30s, our sisters sent a group to an Indian reservation in South Dakota, and they stayed there for about 10 years. And then in the 60s, sent a group of sisters to Chile as a mission, and they were there for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We still have some sisters in El Salvador, two sisters are there. But the kinds of work that the sisters have gotten into since the late 60s are so varied. For example, we are still in education, but a variety of forms of education. We have what we call a program center for learning, where we publish books that are written by teachers for work in the classrooms. And it's a form of education, but we also have other types that they branched out working in colleges and different places. We've had a sister for many years who had worked at the Youngstown State University. And a lot of parish type works, that it's an extension of education, but it's working more with adults in parishes. And also, that stems out of their educational background, and there's a lot of sisters who are doing that kind of work. We also, at the Mother House, have opened a retreat center, so people come from all over, and it's people can of all faiths can come there if they want a day of recollection, a week of time. And we have had summer camps for interested children there. The nursing sisters have developed into a lot of other types of health care. It isn't just strictly nursing. The one sisters are in speech and hearing, they're in social work, and a lot of that different types of work. So there's it's really an exciting time for us because there's a variety of things that the sisters are doing. The community always wore a traditional habit, as we called it, a garb or dress, until 1967, when there was a choice. Some could stay in the traditional, or but there was also an opportunity to wear contemporary clothes. And that was because there had been changes throughout the total Catholic Church as far as looking at that type of thing following the council that was held in Rome in the early 60s. The some of the regulations or the structure of the community was changed. There was much more activity that among the sisters. It wasn't centered in a tightly held group at the top, and it was, the sisters had an opportunity to choose the type of work they wanted. It wasn't done on an assignment basis, although still the sisters have worked through the organization before accepting it, but they can go out and find the kind of work they would like to do. So there's been changes in not only the government structure in that sense, you don't have somebody telling you what to do, but you work with them. And there's still a dedication and a willingness to be of service to others. That's the whole purpose. It hasn't, the way in which it's done may have changed, but not the basic intent for why women decide to enter a community like ours. And, I think those would be major changes that would have taken place, but the basics are still exactly the same. We take three vows. One is a vow of poverty, and that doesn't mean that we live in destitution, but rather any funds that we have, we do not dispose of them on our own. We work in conjunction with the organization. For instance, if we earn a salary, the salary is for the total. It's not for us as individuals. We are all single women. We do not marry, and so that has not changed. The we call that the vow of chastity or celibacy. We also take a vow of obedience. Obedience doesn't mean that someone is telling you what to do, but you're willing to stay with the group and see how together we can work things out. And so the basics of any of our religious life has not changed. The manner in which we carry it out might be manifested in the contemporary world that we live in. We do not have the same kind of strictures that might have been when I first came into religion. You didn't go out alone unless it was an emergency. You had what we called some other sister would go with you. But even in the late 40s, it was not possible because time was precious and you couldn't take another person just to go as a partner. So when I started at Youngstown State, shortly after I arrived in Youngstown, I never had to have a partner, which probably 10 years prior to that you would have had to. And so those are some of the kinds of changes that have taken place. I think there's more opportunity for us as a to not feel in any way inhibited to go into the homes of people and work with people who not in a social, we're not restricted as far as social, but we don't go into the homes to be on a social basis, but rather that's a way that we can be of assistance to them. And In the early foundation of the community, the sisters went into the homes to take care of the sick.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of, then after the hospitals became in existence, we didn't go into the homes. Well, now there are sisters that do home visiting, mm-hmm. go into the home situation. So those are how changes came about.
Okay. How about the religious, religious background of Youngstown? What was the religious, feelings, the wrong word, I had a different word to use, but what was the religious atmosphere of Youngstown?
Well, I think because Youngstown was composed of a highly ethnic mm-hmm. group of people, there were many people from Europe who settled here,
mm-hmm.
and they were from, I wouldn't say it was predominantly Roman Catholic, a lot of them were Orthodox Catholic. For example, the people that would come to work in the mills would be Slovak, Italian,
uh-huh.
and many of them would be Roman Catholic, but then you would have groups that would be from Greece, and they would be Orthodox. And Youngstown always had a significant number of Jewish people
mm-hmm.
that were very active in the Youngstown area. Many of our doctors were Jewish doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it had what I would call an ecumenical flavor because
uh-huh.
I don't know whether there's any one particular religion that predominated. I think there was probably 50% of our patients might be Catholic and 40% might be from various Protestant denominations. And then you'd always have Jewish patients because we had a lot of Jewish doctors,
mm-hmm.
some of our best doctors. And it's only within the last couple years that we've had Asian, mm-hmm. we did have the Filipinos come in the I would say they came in about the late 60s, and they came here for the residency programs in
uh-huh.
medicine, and some settled here, and then the Indian doctors, and they settled here, and I think they were some of the, now there's a bigger proportion of Indian population
uh-huh.
in Youngstown, but it started out with the professional group, and Asians of other countries came. But not until the 60s or 70s. There
uh-huh.
was never a lot of others. So the I would say it started with the ethnic population, and if they were a group of Italians, they settled, and they were, usually it was an Italian priest that would come with them
uh-huh.
and start their parish and start their, and other denominations would pretty much have the same.
Hmm.
There's one of the things that there's always been a healthy mix of people of different religions
mm-hmm.
in Youngstown. And it's never been a problem. Mm-hmm. In some areas now, like Campbell, the numbers of different kinds of would be limited.
Mm-hmm.
They would tend more to, but Youngstown itself was a big mixture of different kinds of people from different
mm-hmm.
places, and they brought with them their religion and that. And so they pretty much kept to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you recall the first time you had the opportunity to meet Rabbi Berkowitz?
No, I couldn't say I remember
uh-huh.
the first time, but I I knew him well in the 60s because he was a frequent visitor to patients.
Uh-huh.
He was probably the 50s and 60s. I was on many local committees working for the betterment of the community in a variety of ways,
uh-huh.
and he always seemed to be on some of those. That's how I got to
uh-huh.
know him. He was also at Rosh Hashanah for many years,
uh-huh.
and he would, he had a very, whenever we'd have any kind of an event, whether it was groundbreaking or it was,
mm-hmm.
He was always one of the rabbis that would be invited because he seemed to be closer to us
mm-hmm.
in a variety of things that we did. And during the 60s, he was one of the first, and I don't know the exact title, but it was Brotherhood Week or Brotherhood
uh-huh.
Time. And he would invite us, and we were still in long habits and all, as a group of sisters,
uh-huh.
to the temple. And would have a service in which he would point out he had invited us and
uh-huh.
welcomed us. And on one or two occasions, he would have me stand up there with him and welcome the people.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, as a generality, we get what the title of that is for the time of a circumcision of a male baby,
fresh
or mm-hmm. something like that. And he always appreciated and would remark that we made arrangements for the rabbi to come, and
uh-huh.
it wouldn't only be himself, it would be the rabbis from the other synagogue. And he also would comment and would that we provided kosher meals at the
uh-huh.
hospital for people that would want to observe the kosher laws when
uh-huh.
they were patients. And he appreciated that, and he always went out of his way to let us know he did.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I was on more than one committee with him in the city,
uh-huh.
and he would be a vital part of that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So I just...
Do you remember any of what the names of these committees
well,
were?
Well, one of the ones was the Mayor's Human Relations.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the ones, and Rabbi Berkowitz was on that. He was active in... Red Cross.
Uh-huh.
He was also active when we had what we call Community Chest,
mm-hmm.
which would be the Forerunner United Way, and we used to have meetings with that. And he was always active in that. He and the Red Cross. He belonged to the would go to the meetings.
Uh-huh.
So I remember from Red Cross, and then the Mayor's Human Relations Committee. The whenever there was a community endeavor. He was always a prime mover in
uh-huh.
trying to get things going. But those would be the main kinds of things, anything that would be connected with the city. And, I think he was one of the men that was looked at, that if there was something was going to move, whether it was a particular problem they were looking into,
mm-hmm.
they would include him on a committee
mm-hmm.
and look to him for his advice, expertise. And He was probably one of the best accepted people. I mean, he was able to get along well with any number of types
mm-hmm.
of people. And I think the demonstration of his inviting us to the Brotherhood Weekend
uh-huh.
was that. And several of our board, people that were on our board at the time, belonged to his temple.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was another way we had contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think he was on Rotary, although women weren't on Rotary at the time, but I know he would always... and when they had any kind of an activity that would be... like when they started the Canfield Fair and
mm-hmm.
things like that, he would be instrumental in making sure they had a... if there was a drive for
mm-hmm.
the benefit of the Boy Scouts or anything like that when they were trying to develop standoff
mm-hmm.
Camps for boys, it was instrumental. And he motivated people to want to be of help.
Mm-hmm.
He explained to me one time that his church was a congregational type
mm-hmm.
Activity, and that was the way that he felt he was expected to let the people see that if he was going to be their rabbi, he would work with them
mm-hmm.
because it was the congregation that really backed him up on these things. And I think
mm-hmm.
he, of all of the people I've known, he was one of the best loved and
mm-hmm.
known. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple physical questions to ask you. What did he look like physically?
He was, I would say, about 5'6", 7".
Uh-huh.
He, by nature, was stocky.
Uh-huh.
He was not heavy set, but mm-hmm. he was a stocky built man. He walked with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He did not give any indication. He always, it was not arrogant in his stance, but I would say had a purposeful walk.
Mm-hmm.
And he, very kindly in his appearance,
mm-hmm.
he would radiate his welcome.
Mm-hmm.
He was not standoffish, although he was a very learned man, but could relate to people of all types,
mm-hmm.
as I remember him. And I would just categorize him. He was a very good friend of Bishop Malone,
mm-hmm.
and Bishop Malone thought very highly of him. And I think they had a lot in common intellectually,
mm-hmm.
because he was a learned person, kept mm-hmm. himself abreast of the times, but never gave the impression of arrogance or that he was too busy to talk to the ordinary folk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about on the Temple Road of Shalom? What's it look like, being non-Jewish? What strikes you about it?
As I remember it, it's been years since I've been in it, but it was on Fifth Avenue at the time. I think it's still there, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, the exterior had many of the symbols, and while it was built close to the sidewalk, it was always kept in very good order. It was mm-hmm. never looked run down, or even when the area was not as well kept up. But I always remember the temple was mm-hmm. an area that whatever greenery it had was kept in good repair.
Mm-hmm.
When you went into the, it had comfortable seats. They were not pews as we have in our mm-hmm. church. There was comfortable seats, and it was arranged so that wherever you sat, you would see the center, which would be similar to the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And they would bring in the rolls of the Torah for one particular that I went, and no matter where you would sit, it was not obstructed in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost in a semicircle around, and I don't know whether the having been in a couple others, I don't know whether their chairs were elevated, you know, as you go mm-hmm. up. And but my recollection of it is that no matter where you sat, you would have easy
mm-hmm.
view of what was going on. And it was plain, but not austere,
mm-hmm.
and the it didn't have a lot of internal furnishings,
mm-hmm.
but that it had was in very good taste.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me red was the color that was used,
mm-hmm.
and any color that was there. I really, going in the temple was very limited for me,
mm-hmm.
but that would be my recollection of it.
How about, a lot of people mention Dr. Berkowitz's ability to give a great oration, great speaking style. What made his speaking style unique to you?
I think you knew he was a learned man, and that he was a well-read person,
mm-hmm.
because he could take his, and I wouldn't say that I was a frequent, didn't hear him, you know, give prepared presentation that often, but any that I did hear, he could, he had a mastery of the English language.
Mm-hmm.
His choice of words were very acute. He had the right word for trying to say what he wanted to
mm-hmm.
say. He did not have any hesitancy in speaking. He spoke clearly, and my impression is that being a well-read person, he invited you to be part of his appreciation of what mm-hmm. he was talking about. He didn't talk down to people.
Mm-hmm.
He was able in anything that I've heard him give was that, you know, you and I want to enjoy this particular information that mm-hmm. he was sharing. And I think that's a real gift.
Okay, how would you describe his role within the Youngstown community?
I think he was one of the leaders of the uh-huh. Youngstown community. I think that would be about the, he was, I didn't know him in a social way,
mm-hmm.
and I would know about him probably more than I would know him.
Mm-hmm.
And any time that there was anything at all, whether it was a community endeavor, whether it was leaders of the community, whether it was like a drive for mm-hmm. any type of thing, he would be among the leaders of the community. I would look at him as a major, assumed a major leadership role
mm-hmm.
in the community, and carried it out very well.
Mm-hmm.
He was looked at, he was respected. He seemed not to alienate people. He didn't. I don't know of instances where he would take part in, you know, any controversy mm-hmm. that would alienate people. That he was dedicated to his own people, his own temple.
Mm-hmm.
He was always well. We called him Dr. Berkowitz. He was always. He never lost sight of the fact that he was a religious person.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, he dressed in a business man type suits and all,
mm-hmm.
but he had the aura of a well-respected business person, and at the same time, you didn't lose sight of that he was a God-fearing man.
Mm-hmm.
That's my impression of him.
Well, is there anything we haven't touched on that you think we need to add? Or?
No, I just would say that he was great loss to the mm-hmm. community. He was kind, understanding, and I thought a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I would say I did not know him in a social way, nor would I have any occasion to.
Mm-hmm.
But our paths crossed so many times, and he was never a person that would pass you by.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed to have a magnificent recall of names.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to, retain a variety. I've seen him in situations where he seemed to know people.
Mm-hmm.
But, came from many walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, you know, anything I knew about him, I knew him in a business way, or in a, because of my work at the hospital mm-hmm. and my involvement at the hospital brought me into a lot of civic things, and uh-huh. that's where I had encounters with him. Not that I would know him other than that.
Okay.
But I appreciated having known him. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And
what'll happen now?